You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, the third floor of the Cub. And on today's show, we're going to talk about the tech news you should know, and most importantly, Xbox 360. Winnie Banner, Hurricane Wilma, and other sports, we have Jerry Lima of the Palouse Thunder coming on to talk to us about the Thunder and their tryouts coming up, as well as intramural dodgeball, former Cougars in sports, high school football, and more. The WSU Department of Residence Life is seeking student leaders from across campus to serve as resident advisors for the 2006-2007 academic year. Applications are available at www.livingat.wsu.edu/ra. They are due November 1st at noon. Contact Josh Gunna at 335-0185 for more information. Are you in need of free legal advice? Contact Student Legal Services for a free 30-minute consultation. Visit their office in Cub Room 316 or call them at 335-9539. KZUU offers free public service announcements, just like the ones you just heard. You need to get the word out about your club or event, stop by the KZUU office, Cub Room 311, and fill out a PSA form. You're listening to KZUU, 90.7 FM. And life has brought in some information about, what, the Xbox 360?
I have, okay, I guess we're doing that right away.
Yeah, right now. Right, let's hear about it.
Right,
I'm all excited.
All right, well, Christmas is just around the corner, and you may be wondering what to get that someone special, or just for yourself, for that matter. Well, the next generation of consoles is just on the horizon. In fact, on November 22nd, less than a month from now, Microsoft will be releasing its Xbox 360. So I've decided to do a little review on this beast of a machine. First off, I got most of this information off of Xbox.com, so just check it out if you want to see all the pretty pictures and such. The real question everybody wants answered is, of course, is this thing the size of a small car like the original? Well, the answer to that is no. It is noticeably smaller and more curvaceous than its predecessor. The appearance out of the box is a nice cream color with a large button on the front, just like kind of like the first one, only black, and that one was black. Let's see, the faceplate can be changed, however, to fit personal tastes. Of course, those are going to be sold separately because they have to make money somewhere. Speaking of the extra costs, what is the price of the 360? Well, that's a good question because it depends on what you want in your 360. The core system is priced at the standard $300, and that just contains the system and a controller. Yay, fun stuff. The core system does not include the hard drive that everybody wanted from the Xbox. Let's see. The core system, let's see, yeah, I already said that. It does not, however, still, or it does, however, still connect to Xbox Live with a subscription. The core system can be upgraded to the full system later. More than likely, however, that will just cost more than buying the full system.
I got a quick important question.
Yes, sir?
Can I play my regular Nintendo games on that thing?
You can't play Nintendo games on your Xbox.
Tecmo Bowl? No Tecmo Bowl?
No, you gotta buy a Nintendo for that.
I got a Nintendo.
Or if you want to get the next generation, the Revolution is coming out next year.
Nintendo
Revolution?
And that
completely backwards compatible with every single Nintendo system.
Really? Very cool.
Console system, not the Game Boy games.
Right. But I honestly don't have anything past the regular old Nintendo. And I mean, Tecmo Bowl, Blades of Steel, Baseball Stars. Those are the three good games right there.
I'm sure. Well, if you already have one,
my friend has a GameCube. I play Madden 2005 on there. That's a fun game.
That's an awesome game. I love Madden. And NCAA, even better. I like NCAA even better. Let's see, where the heck was I, sir?
Jeez. Sorry.
Let's get to the full system. The full system Xbox 360 will run about $400. If you already pre-ordered, because most places are sold out already from their pre-orders, it's going to run you about $400. That may seem like a lot for a console, but this thing is like a computer that you got just running on your TV. It's actually more powerful than most, and then a lot of computers that are on desks right now in your guys' offices and such.
Do you want to kind of processor it has?
Hold on. I'll get that down there.
Okay.
Hold on.
Let me not interrupt.
Let's see. But what do you get for that extra $100? Well, of course, you get the 20-gigabyte hard drive, which was a huge selling factor for the original Xbox. Also included are a wireless controller, mouse, and headset for Live. Kind of wonder how that's an extra $100 for just that when you can get a 20-gigabyte hard drive for a lot less than that. And a headset doesn't cost much either, but oh well. Let's see, but really what matters is the insides, right? Let's see, let's start with processor. This thing is a processing fiend. Inside its CPU are three separate processors running at 3 gigahertz each.
Wow, that is impressive.
That's pretty impressive, man.
Yeah, it is.
The Xbox 360 boasts a custom ATI graphics processor that clocks in at a blistering 500 megahertz. Xbox 360 can take advantage of more than four times as many polygons as the original Xbox console and more than four times the number of pixels per second.
So why is that important?
That's important because new games, especially these next generation games, are awesome, and I'll talk a little bit about that down at the bottom here.
Are the next generation games, are they going to be more realistic, or is it going to be like actual virtual reality where if you shoot somebody there, somebody actually dies on the other end?
I don't think that's happened yet. No? But okay. Once that happens, somebody's going to make millions.
Oh,
kill people through the
cool.
Internet and such. Yeah, millions. There's 512 megabytes of RAM in the Xbox 360, and that's eight times the amount in the original Xbox. System RAM gives developers a unified memory architecture. Game creators decide how to partition it, and all the hardware components, like the CPU and GPU, can access the memory. Not exactly sure what that means, but I guess with the PS3, it's more limited, and I don't know. The developers can't do as much with the RAM, partition it for themselves.
PS3 is the PlayStation.
Sony PlayStation.
And that is coming out, or is it?
That's going to come out next year. I think it's going to come out before the Revolution, but don't quote me on that.
Okay. So this is supposed to be, Sony PlayStation 3 is supposed to battle with the Revolution then, essentially?
Yeah, there's the top three are Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft.
Sure.
And, the last generation consoles, PlayStation came out first.
I had my Nintendo Tecmo Bowl still.
But and this time Microsoft decided to get a heads up on everybody and really get
their first
system
everything
out there, which will give it big sales at the beginning because it's the only one out. Especially,
sure,
it's the only one out this year. The rest are coming out next year. Where the heck is it?
So that you're looking about $400 for that system?
$400.
That's actually sort of a bargain when you think about the kind of chips and computing power that thing has.
It really is.
You buy a computer with three gigahertz chips and what did you say? Some humongous graphics card and all that kind of stuff.
500 megahertz graphics card. Yeah.
You're gonna be paying $400+ for something like that.
Yeah, for a computer. Yeah, it's true. They usually don't make money off of the consoles themselves. They make them off the accessories and the games.
Yeah, I could imagine.
Okay. Is this system high definition capable? The answer is, of course, yes. Games are required for the Xbox 360 to be authored for 720p and 1080i. Not exactly sure what the heck those mean. Maybe you can explain. You're the big computer.
Well, 720 by... What did you say? 720 by 1080?
No, it just says 720p and 1080i. Maybe that's... Is that...
The hand signals don't work over the radio, but... Yeah, that would be your height and width. It's, you know, the resolution, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Number of lines.
Okay. That makes sense.
Also, if you have any questions for Life or have any comments, you can give us a call, 335-2207.
Because I am an expert. Yeah, right. Okay, no. let's see. And all games are optimized for the 16:9 widescreen viewing ratio. That doesn't mean you have to have an HD TV to play Xbox 360 games. They'll just look much, much better for them. See, this part I think is pretty cool. Xbox 360 utilizes 48 parallel shader pipelines in the graphics processing unit that developers can optimize to get the performance they want. Each type of game can look completely different and show the diversity of the GPU's flexibility. So that's kind of cool. They can just select whichever shader they want and make their game look better. Oh, and one more thing I forgot to mention about the hard drive. Similar to the original, you can save your music onto the Xbox 360 and use it as soundtracks for your games. The difference, however, in this time is that Microsoft made it a stipulation that this must be true for every game on the 360. So every game you can make your own soundtrack on.
So could you imagine playing Tetris without the doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot?
Well, heck no, because that song is awesome by itself. But
okay,
there are some games where the music sucks.
Yeah.
You want to put on some much better stuff. Like Air.
Oh, no Air. not for me, at least. I mean, if that's your cup of tea, then more power to you.
Let's see here. Yes, DVD capabilities. The Xbox 360 can play DVD movies straight out of the box, unlike its predecessor. Microsoft has decided to stick with the DVD-style optical drive, which limits 8.5 gigs on a DVD, rather than switch to the new Blu-ray style, which can hold at least 25 gigabytes on a disc. In contrast, Sony has opted for the Blu-ray technology in their PlayStation 3s, which I'll talk about later if more information comes out, because they're really kind of limiting their information on the Revolution and the PlayStation 3 right now, just because they're so far away. That's pretty much it for the innards. Now, what about the games and such? First of all, here is the unofficial list of launch titles that will be released with the Xbox 360 on November 22nd. It's unofficial because, obviously, they don't not exactly sure what's going to come out. There could be more. Hopefully there's not less. We've got NBA 2K6, which was originally with Sony, and now I think Take-Two Studios owns them. NHL 2K6, Top Spin 2, Amped 3. This one I'm excited about, The Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion. And this is the game that's really going to show that graphics card, because it's just amazing. It's a role-playing game. The successor to the immensely popular Elder Scrolls 3, Morrowind. The forests I've seen on the pictures of this game, amazing.
Did they have Tecmo Bowl on that list?
Tecmo Bowl. You know, I'm thinking not.
I have a feeling I'm not going to be buying that console.
Well, probably not. It's $400, you know. Let's see. From Activision, we got Call of Duty 2, Quake 4, Tony Hawk's American Wasteland, and Gun. From Electronic Arts, you got Need for Speed Most Wanted, FIFA 6, Road to FIFA World Cup, NBA Live 06, always popular franchise there, and Tiger Woods PGA Tour 6, and Madden NFL 06. EA Sports, keeping it real. Let's see here. From Rare, defense Microsoft, got Cameo, Elements of Power, and Perfect Dark Zero, which I'm also pretty excited about, because for the original Nintendo 64, they had Perfect Dark, and that game kicked butt. And then from Bizarre Creations, we got Project Gotham Racing 3. Let's see, and to quell the rumors, the Xbox 360 is not backwards compatible with every original Xbox game, which is a pretty big bit of news. Xbox.com will have a list of backwards compatible games in 1 to 2 weeks. Each game actually has to, they're using it on a, I can't remember the word, but anyway, each game must be made backwards compatible individually. Xbox Live users will get an auto update that will allow for more games as they go through certification. Xbox Live is being redrafted to Silver and Gold tiers. Silver tiers offer limited live capabilities to select games, while Gold members will be able to get all the good stuff that Premium Service members enjoy now. But the big step up is the Xbox Live Marketplace, which will serve as an online launch platform for downloading value-added content such as new demos, levels, maps, and skins. So you don't expect giveaways. However, Microsoft and third-party publishers will be looking to monetize Xbox Live beyond the flat yearly free. Money, money, money. Let's see, what about non-gaming? The Xbox 360's built-in ability to serve as a media center extender will let users stream digital video, audio, and photos from networked PCs running Windows XP Media Center Edition. You can pretty much talk to your computer, any Windows computer, obviously.
Right, and so it'd work almost like a Replay TV or a TiVo, then, it sounds like?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah,
what kind of hard drive did it have in it to be able to hold that data?
20 gigabytes.
20 gig? Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
So, are you able to record your gaming action as it happens so you could relive your glory later on TV? Send it to friends, put it on the internet?
That's a good question, actually.
I would wonder. That'd be sort of interesting.
I think I'd be
awful bored. It's boring enough watching somebody else play a video game, let alone watching a replay of the video game being played later on.
Man, you might be able to stream it to your PC, too, and just do it that way. I'm sure there's a way to do it. I'm not sure, though. See, Microsoft is also promising the ability to stream... Oh, let's check this out right here. Let's see. Microsoft is also promising the ability to stream media from portable music devices, digital cameras, and Windows XP-based PCs. So I guess that didn't answer anything. Also, like I said before, the 360 will double as a CD-DVD player. Let's see here. Yep. Speaking of gaming... here we go. Speaking of gaming, did you know that Washington State University has its own gaming clubs right here on campus? Starting just this year, Wazoo Gamers has been at all the Up All Nights and will be there tomorrow at Fright Fest in the Cub starting at 9 p.m. You don't want to miss us, folks. They are having a tournament with the newly released Soul Calibur 3 for the PS2. First place prize, well, a brand new copy of Soul Calibur 3, of course. Complimentaries of Video Game Headquarters.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, awesome. See, they will also be showcasing Stubbs the Zombie for Xbox for some good brains-eating, soul-stealing fun. The game looks pretty fun. You get to be Stubbs the Zombie, and you just get to create your own army of zombies and eat people's brains. Also, every Saturday at 10 a.m. in the Clevenger Lounge, Wazoo Gamers has board game sessions. These also function as impromptu info meetings, so if you're interested, show up at the board game session with your favorite tabletop game or visit www.wazoogamers.com. That's WSUGAMERS.com for more info. And,
These computers, they're so naughty and so complex. I could pinch them.
It is true.
Yeah, I still think Nintendo with the two buttons and the little controller is about enough.
Wait till I get to the Revolution. I'm a big Nintendo fanboy, so, wow.
With the Revolution, is that going to be like a, 30 or 40 buttons, a keyboard?
No. People are kind of pissed because the actual...
They're kind of mad?
They're kind of mad.
Kind of upset? I'm not sure if you're allowed to say that on the air there, right?
Wasn't sure if that was one of the words.
I'm not sure. Shame on you.
I apologize.
Oh, here comes the Gestapo. They're coming to take you right now.
No, the Revolution, the controller is just, it looks like a remote control. It's got like 5 buttons on it right now, which compared to the 13, I think, on the Xbox and PS2 controllers
that's
now.
That's not many. That's simplified.
It's very simplified. You can turn it on. It's wireless, completely wireless, using Bluetooth. So you can turn it on its side and download from the Nintendo Marketplace. I don't know if that's the official name. I just made that up, but it's going to be pretty much the same thing, where you can buy Nintendo games, old Nintendo games, Super Nintendo games, N64 games, straight off their network. And it's pretty cool. And it's going to have all sorts of accessories, because you got to make your money.
Got to make it somehow.
Yeah, to play the original game, old games.
So I think we already covered this, but just to be sure, they're not going to have Tecmo Bowl, or even a Super Tecmo Bowl, huh?
You never know. It might make a huge comeback, but I'm pretty sure that Madden 06 is really...
That's probably sort of taken over the Tecmo Bowl market.
And it's taken over pretty much everything. EA Sports, they own...
EA Sports.
They own the world, yeah.
Yeah, so... I don't know. I think I'm happy with Tecmo Bowl. I'm happy with, I take the Seahawks to the championship all the time. It's pretty cool. Win the Tecmo Bowl. Baseball Stars. Have you ever played Baseball Stars?
Oh, yeah, a long time ago.
A long time ago, back when I was like 3.
Back when I was... Hey.
Yeah, I've had that game for years, and I've been building up my team, and I just have this crushing just kill everybody team. And it's sort of fun to play it now because most of my team is named after Mariners of the 80s and, you know, late 80s, early 90s. So it's like to see all these old names. It's actually sort of funny, you know, that you got the Hackman and Coles and Griffey, part of the team, Johnson, you know, that kind of stuff. And then, of course, Blades of Steel. Have you played Blades of Steel?
Blades of Steel, yes.
Blades of Steel.
Yeah,
a great game.
I had that game.
I love getting into fights all the time. I figured out how to get into fights, so I'd sit there and fight people all the time.
With a good sound, it's all like, good old 8-bit stuff. Yeah, man.
Yeah, so I also had a Channel F. I told you about that last
week. You told me about the Channel F.
Did you ever look it up?
I forgot to look
it
up.
You gotta look it up. Go to like eBay.com or any site and look up Channel F. There's a whole bunch of different cartridges out there. It's pretty interesting. I don't think it's really worth much anymore. And, you know, people would look at it today and say, man, those are baby games, you know, sort of like Back to the Future when he goes into the future. And remember he's in the 80s diner.
Yeah.
And they had that video game. I think it was Hogan's Alley.
I love that game.
And he's like, oh, man, I'm awesome in this game. And the kids are looking at it like, how do you play that? And he pulls out the gun and he starts shooting stuff. They go, and they made some sort of mention about how you have to touch it and that's such a kid's game or that's a baby's game or something like that. I don't know. Anyway.
Go ahead. That game's awesome.
That's what I'm saying. Do you have Hogan's Alley for regular Nintendo? Do you even have regular Nintendo?
I don't.
Anymore?
Oh, and I forgot that I'm going to mention this. What's really cool is that from all the pictures of the Nintendo Revolution, looks like they're bringing back another Zapper because of the wireless thing. Because the remote can attach to, like, everything.
A Zapper?
Yeah, the original Nintendo Zapper.
The gun?
Yeah, the gun.
Shortly after made orange.
Yeah, for safety reasons.
For safety.
I guess.
Yeah. So they're bringing back, they call it a Zapper. Is that sort of like calling a paintball gun a marker?
No, the original one was called the Zapper.
Was it really?
Yeah.
They probably called it a Zapper because they didn't want to call it a gun.
Yeah.
Well, if it was a Zapper, why did they need to turn it orange?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Just because you can't have, I think, wasn't there a law about that? Can't have toy guns, can't have some orange marker.
But it wasn't a gun, it was a Zapper. You already said that.
It looked, whatever, it's a laser. A laser.
A laser gun. Speaking of laser guns, did you ever play laser tag? Wow, we've gone from the future of video games to the history of toys.
Yeah. Oh, I played laser tag. My friends got back in the day. We used to play that all the time.
Yeah, I actually still have my laser gun and everything, and I have the little guy that would like beep. And that was the only annoying thing about the game was that you wore that thing on your chest, and the sensor. Well, I never got the helmet. That looked sort of bad.
Oh, we use that helmet for all sorts of stuff, with video cameras and stuff.
That's not a bad idea, but the sensor would go on your chest, and it'd sit there and it'd beep. And the more times you got hit, the quicker it'd beep, and the only thing that really sucked about it was...
When you're trying to hide?
Yeah, there was no stealthiness in the game at all, because it's like, beep, 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 beep. It's like, oh, geez, I wonder who's over there.
So it favors the winners.
It does. It totally favors the winners. Now, do any of these new games, are they going to come out with the power pad?
I don't know if the power
pad... The idea of exercise is just out of everybody's vocabulary anymore.
I don't know if the power pad's going to make a huge comeback. However,
it never made a huge splash to begin with, though, really.
I didn't know.
I mean, there was only a couple games of it. Yeah.
I can remember is Track and Field.
Yeah, it was actually funny. I had it, and I lived in the second floor of our house. It was my playroom, my TV room, my video game room, or whatever. And my friends would come over, and we'd all play with the power pad and play Track and Field and do things. And you know, when you're running on that thing, it's like, you know, especially on the second floor, you're like, bah, 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 you know, making all this noise. And one particular day, my mom hears just a ruckus upstairs, so she thinks we're up there playing with it. And all of a sudden, I come out of our living room, and she looks at me, and she hears the noise. So she goes upstairs. As it turns out, my dog and my cat were in that room, and the dog was running around trying to catch the cat, and the cat was running for its life, but the door was shut. So luckily, we got up there and saved the cat's life.
That's good.
One of its lives. It still lived after it, but it might have lost a couple of them in the process. But anyway, did you have anything else on the video games or anything upcoming?
I'm just going to say... The Power Pad may not make a huge comeback, but there is a huge franchise called Dance Dance Revolution. Got one down here, in the Cub.
Oh, that's a good point.
And that
not for much longer though.
Probably not.
No, because they're going to turn it into the bookie.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
They're going to do the whole. They should just put a big huge sign on the front of the Cub and call it the bookie.
Brings a tear to my eye.
I know. I'm not in favor of this whole entire changeover of the bookie to the Cub type thing. But hey, or excuse me, the Cub to the bookie. But that's just me, because I think the student union building, the Compton Union building, should be a place for the students not to go shopping in a mall setting, but actually to go and relax, hence the video game arcade, the pool tables, the ping pong tables, the bowling, a place to study, a place to eat, a place to relax, like I already said, exactly. But a place to have for clubs and organizations, a place for student government. That's, to me, what a student union building is. Not a bookstore, not photocopy centers and all these other things that are there for selling stuff. There's places all over town where you can buy things. Why don't we have the Cub remain the place for the students? Sorry that I went on my little rant. We're not quite at Witty Banner yet, but when we get there, you will hear more from me. But in the meantime, you need to hear from the Reverend, of course, the favorite of the PES. We can never get enough of the Reverend on the PES. You're at the bottom of the hour, the 11 o'clock hour. First hour of the PES on the second Thursday we've been doing the show. This is KCUU 90.7 FM broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, the third floor of the Cub. Reach us in the studio, 509-335-2207, on the website www.kcuu.org. Also, you can get the PES website at www.thepes.com. There's a link to our current show, what we're going to be talking about, the times we're going to be talking about those items, and a message board where you can leave us all sorts of hate-filled messages, because we are going into the Witty Banner section, and this is the part of the show that everybody loves to hate. Except for me. I like the part. The doctor is in. Orton Hall will be holding a haunted house this weekend, Friday and Saturday, the 28th and 29th, from 7 to 9 p.m., and 9:30 to 11 p.m. on Halloween. The hospital will be open from 7 to 9. Call Ed Felt at 509-333-1876 for more information. Goblins and witches and ghouls, oh my! The 4th annual Haunted Palouse will be held in the town of Palouse Friday and Saturday, October 28th and 29th, from 7 to 10 p.m. There is a special Halloween haunting from 7 to 11 on Monday, October 31st. Come and see two haunted buildings and a corn maze while supporting the city of Palouse. Tickets are $10 for the corn maze and the haunted places, but the experience is free. 12 and older only, please, and bring an extra pair of underwear. The WSU Egg Club will be sponsoring a guest speaker from the Miami Ad School. Daniel McAtee will speak Friday, October 28th at 6 p.m. in Murrow 229. Come and learn about this portfolio school for advertising creatives and eat free pizza. Yum! Any questions? Call Christine Russo at 253-241-9875. If you need any of those numbers or any information, you can give us a call at the studio, 335-2207, and we'll give you the more information. However, you try that right now, I ain't answering. Well, maybe I will. We'll see what happens. All right, in politics, around the world today, Harriet Myers has withdrawn her name from consideration for the position of Supreme Court Justice. Bush has reluctantly accepted the resignation or the withdrawal of her name and is going to name a replacement soon. And if you read... What's that?
That's a big thing.
Yes, it is. It's going to be pretty big because now we're going to have somebody new to quabble over for a couple weeks. Now, if you read The Evergreen and you listened to our show a couple weeks ago, you'd know how this story goes together. Ed Swan is not College of Education material. I guess if he were to start sexually harassing women, he would be accepted down there. Ooh.
That's just nuts.
Yeah, I'm going to get in trouble over that one, I think. Move over, PARD. You now have competition. Business and Residence for Economic Opportunity, BREO, is a grassroots organization that supports free enterprise, business growth, and healthy competition in the city of Pullman in Whitman County. You can visit their website at www.letsgrowpullman.com. And if you read The Evergreen the other day, you'll know where this came from. And this goes under my under-protected free speech column. However, there's a little footnote that says, ironically. As quoted from the Daily Evergreen, John Stremus, an assistant professor for the CES department, shouted at the audience as he made observations about violence connected to racism and then said the U.S. Constitution was racist, sexist document that ought to be burnt. Well, I was talking to some people about that, and one person expressed their opinion saying, it might not be popular, but that's the beauty of the USA. He should be able to express his opinions too. Which my response is, It is the Constitution that says what powers the government is granted by the people, and for him to use the rights bestowed upon him by his Creator, the things pointed out in the Constitution, to speak out against the item that provides for it to do so, is asinine. For him to say, let's burn this thing, and for him have the right of the government not to tell him he can't do it, it's like, what the, you can't put two and two together there. It is not making sense.
True, and I mean, even though the Constitution isn't a perfect document, that's why they also put in the Constitution that you can change things with amendments. And it's like, I don't know.
Now you're being silly. Okay, and I was going to talk a little bit about Hurricane Katrina and the story that I found on this website about a flood, a large cyclone, as they call them down in Australia, had hit, and the kind of flooding, the problems they ran into, and how it paralleled what was going on in New Orleans. And the story itself, you can actually find a link to it from our website, www.thepes.com, and go to current show. There's a link to it. It's from the strangepolice.com website. And it's called What's Really Behind the Chaos in New Orleans. And the story is, it's several paragraphs long. More or less, it says that he, you know, back in the day, back in the 70s, him and his wife's daughter, they're living there. They're, you know, they're living just barely to their means. They would go shopping for food once a week, and then a hurricane came. It didn't look like it was going to be that big of a deal. But all of a sudden, it stalled over them, and it rained, and it rained, and it rained for like four straight days. They got like 4 feet of rain or something like that. And this little river was totally flooded. The whole entire town was flooded. I mean, you couldn't see rooftops or anything like that. The whole entire town was just destroyed. But the local police and the Air Force, they worked together to get people out of the area, get food and supplies and all that kind of stuff that was needed to help these people. There was only two people that were drowned in the whole process when their trailer was swept away. The whole story goes through, and it talks about how they had no electricity, they had no water, but you know, being that it was a temperate, you know, subtropical climate, it was sort of warm out. He talked about how it was their normal shopping day, so they didn't have a lot of food or anything like that. But the neighbors got together, and realizing that without the power, a lot of their food's going to go bad, so they just all went together, and they pretty much, you know, pooled all their food together. Everybody got together. They got all the supplies they needed to help each other survive, and they worked on surviving for one another. And the thing about it was is that when it was all said and done, you know, waters receded. Every, you know, life more or less went back to normal. Then he draws some parallels to what happened there to what happened in New Orleans. And these are the things that I'm going to read verbatim, just because I don't want to misquote him, and I sort of like the way he said them. So he says, what does this have to do with New Orleans? Plenty. We've gone a long way in the past 40 years to creating a dysfunctional society where self-reliance, pride in one's self, and a sense of right and wrong are no longer esteemed or even valued. We have allowed our government and media to say to people that you are not at fault for what you do. You are victims, little children who cannot look out for yourselves. We have told our minorities that everything that goes wrong is a result of racism, that you cannot succeed in a racist society. We have told the dysfunctional that we will look after you no matter how egregiously you act. We have excused crime, saying that poverty creates crime, when we instinctively know that it's crime that creates poverty. Those are some of the main ones. He also has, we have told young women that it's okay to have babies without fathers. There's no stigma attached. In fact, if you have a baby, we shower you with money and benefits so you can move out of your parents' house and have even more babies, even if it guarantees your babies will be raised in poverty. We have told young men that it's okay to father as many children as you can. The government will assume the father's traditional role and look after the mother and the babies. And most importantly, we have called morals old-fashioned and judgmental. What right does society have to say that something is right or wrong? And what have we gotten for all of this? Not to mention the $1 trillion we have spent on the poor? Citizens who, at the first sign of trouble, stand around bewildered. You see it on the news. Faces screaming, help me. Tell me what to do. And I thought that was so true. I mean, you saw it in New Orleans in a major way. People were helpless. so to speak. They did not rely upon themselves. They did not do what they could to get themselves out of trouble. They sat around saying, what's the government going to do for me? What is the government? Where is the government? I want the government. And it's like, no, look in the mirror. I've said this before and I'll say it again. Look in the mirror. That's who's going to help you. The government might be there to assist you, but you have to start by helping yourself. You need to get off your duff, walk out your front door, walk to higher ground if you don't have a car. You need to do something to make yourself safe first. You can't expect the government to come in and hold your hand and raise you. You're an adult. You have a parent, or hopefully two parents, until you're at least 18 years old, who will do those things for you. But once you're 18, this whole entire idea of freedom, where everybody wants to run off to college and be free and be their own man, they say that until something goes wrong. Then all of a sudden they're saying, where's the government? Where's the government? Where's the government? You know, why weren't you there to protect me from myself? Why don't you have a law that says I can't do X, Y, and Z? Rather than using common sense, they will claim the government needs to protect them from themselves, protect us from everybody else, protect us, protect us, protect us. We're giving up everything in order to be safe and secure by the government. And it's a scary thought. I don't like it one bit. Now, this brings me to Hurricane Wilma when it hit Florida, and this was awesome. The people were complaining. I'm sorry. Okay, let me. The hurricane hitting Florida was not awesome. I'm sorry for any Florida. Jeez, you guys are still without power. You can't hear me. Sucks to be you. Anyway, the part that's awesome is what Jeb Bush said in response to what I'm about to say. People were complaining and reporting that they were standing in lines for 9 hours waiting to get the essentials. It's horrible. I'm in line. It's 9 hours and I have nothing. I need stuff. Where's the government? Well, Jeb Bush said it like it is. He said people had ample time to prepare. It is not hard to get 72 hours worth of food and water. They knew that hurricane was coming for days. I knew it was coming for days. They could have gone to the store and bought water. They could have gone to the store and bought food. They could have gone. They're living in Hurricane Alley. Maybe they ought to have their own little Honda generator or something like that to run a few things. But even if they don't, they could have gone and got a camping stove and a couple things of propane. They could have done a lot of things to prepare for this storm coming. It's not like it hit out of nowhere. But no. Once again, they're just lost without the government doing everything for them. And you wonder why the government does do everything for them, because people are like, oh, geez, I don't know what to do. You better do something for me. So the government, if they don't act, the people are like, oh, you guys are horrible people because you're not helping me in my time of need. So the government's like, oh, geez, we better be your mom and dad and help you in your time of need and show that we care and give all this tax money to everybody.
Or we'll lose the vote.
Exactly. Okay. So the other thing about Jeb Bush, he reiterated something I said a couple weeks ago when I was talking about Hurricane Katrina, about the fact that the state and the local government is responsible for itself before the federal government is. And Jeb Bush stated, don't blame FEMA. This is our responsibility. Now, I just wish that the local government down in New Orleans had the same attitude rather than saying, oh, Jesus, all Bush's fault. Why did they screw everything up? FEMA should have been here 3 days before the hurricane hit. They knew it was coming. Well, so did you. Why didn't you get your bums out of town? And when I say bums, I don't mean the people on the street corners asking for money. I meant your rear ends. Bums as in the English bum, okay? Anyway, what do you have to say about this before I ask you about Social Security? I've said it all there is to say.
Pretty much.
Okay, thank you very much. I try. Okay. What do you know about Social Security?
I know that I probably won't get any.
That's not necessarily true. But under my plan, what year were you born?
I was 70, born in 1980.
80, okay. You might squeak in, okay. So here's my plan. And call me nuts, call me crazy, but I don't think it's the government's role to be supplying for our retirement. Once again, the government's role is not to look after me. It's my role to look after me, and it's the government's role to put an infrastructure in place for me to survive and to compete and to live in this environment. It's not the government's role to help me live. It's the government's role to make sure the infrastructure's there.
Right.
So, that being said, Social Security, it is socialist, pure and simple. Socialist, socialist, socialist. There's a lot of socialist things going on in America, which we don't need. Socialized healthcare, nationalized healthcare, whatever you want to call it. Socialism. No, 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 no. Not the government's role. Healthcare is not a right, never has been, Never will be. Well, maybe with certain Democratic senators in power, they might try to make it a right. Maybe change the Constitution that says, you know, that there's a right to health care. But health care is not a right. It never has been. Just as driving is not a right, though a lot of people like to think it is. It's not a right. However, gun ownership is a right, and for some reason, that's the one that they want to control. Anyway, getting back to Social Security. I love my little tangents sometimes. I don't do it on purpose. It just happens. Okay, my goal is to get rid of Social Security. It doesn't need to be there. It should not be there. We need to get rid of it. Now, don't start crying for Grandma and Grandpa because they'll be fine. And don't even cry for Mom and Dad because they'll be fine too under my plan. I'll put everything in a lockbox. I'm just joking. No, but my plan, and I'm not John Kerry. I'm not going to say plan 30 times in 5 minutes. But my plan is to plan on, no, I'm joking, don't start counting. Okay, so the plan is this. Draw a line in the sand. Draw a line in the sand and says, okay, if you're standing on side A of the line, you're going to get Social Security. We will guarantee you Social Security benefits as you were promised as you were growing up and that you've paid in for years. If you're standing on side B of the sand, tough luck. Guess what? You're going to have to live for yourself. You're going to have to provide for yourself just like you should have to provide for yourself. It's not the government's role to provide for you. You take that money that you're paying into Social Security and you put it in to your own retirement program and you make your own money and you retire on your own. You don't have the government helping you. So what happens is...
And you do have extra money.
What's that?
You do have that extra money.
And you do have that extra money. So here's what I'm thinking is you draw this line in the sand. And I was thinking something where, you know, maybe 1984, 1985, right in there, something where the people are just getting out of college, just getting into the work world, so they haven't been putting a lot of money into Social Security up to this point. So you draw the line. Let's say 1984. So 21 years old, you're just getting out of college. So if you were born January 1, 1984, or after, you're not going to get Social Security when you turn of retirement age, which, as everybody knows, that retirement age has been creeping up and creeping up and creeping up. Heck, if you were born in 1984, by the time you get to retirement age, it would be like, what, 2064, because they're going to make you be 80 years old by that point in time because they won't have enough money otherwise. So the thing is that what we'll do is we'll draw the line at January 1, 1984. There's a line in the sand. So if you're born January 1st, 1984, you will not get Social Security, which means that you will have to provide for yourself. However, here's the sucky part for those born after 1984.
The money you've already paid?
They will still pay. They will still pay into Social Security. But you know what? There's a lot of people that pay taxes for things that they never see the benefit of. And you know what? Sometimes in America, when a president decides to start a socialist program, it's going to be socialist until it's gone. And the only way to get rid of it is to... I guess we could just cut it all together, but that, honestly, I'm about fair. I'm about being fair. And we need to be fair to the people who were expecting it and were promised it for years. But if you tell the people who are 20 years old now that it's not going to be there, it's not going to be there. They're not going to plan on it. Life is okay. And guess what? You pay taxes for things that you don't even do. People pay for that rec center, and they never use the thing. So there's taxes that get paid. But the nice thing is, so you're born January 1, 1984. You're going to continue paying taxes into Social Security, maybe at a slightly less rate, but you're going to still pay into it. And what's going to happen is as people grow older and older and older and older, pretty soon the Social Security, the amount of people on Social Security is going to shrink because everybody born after 1984 is never going to be on it. So you got this pool of people born 1983 till, you know, 1900 or whatever, in the 1800s. And that pool of people in that window is going to keep shrinking and keep shrinking and keep shrinking and keep shrinking and keep shrinking. And pretty soon, the last guy born in 1983 will die. But by the time he becomes the last fish in the sea, the people who are paying into Social Security will be paying such a small amount, they might not even be paying anything. Or they might be paying 1/1,000,000th of a percent of their paycheck or whatever. I mean, the point is that you're going to get to this point where this pool of payments is just going to shrink down. And those who are stuck paying taxes who were born in 1984 and on, the amount that they're paying into Social Security is going to diminish, and pretty soon it will start diminishing rapidly as there will be more people paying into it and less people taking out of it. And pretty soon those payments will almost go down to nothing, and pretty soon they will go to nothing, and not a single person in America will pay a penny into Social Security. That's my plan on getting rid of Social Security. What do you think?
That sounds like a plan. I'm not exactly sure if it would all work out as you say, but I don't know. Yeah, so I don't know. I just don't think I can get much on these social security anyway.
I mean, it seems
anyway.
Pretty straightforward to me that if people are paying into it, then they stop paying into it, it goes away. I mean, what's
that? Yeah, I'm not exactly sure this whole after 19. I get the whole cutting off after 1984.
Sure.
But they keep paying.
Well, you'd have to have somebody paying taxes still. Because the pool of money that's there would get sucked dry, right? So you still have to put money into it. Essentially, you're taking from the rich, the people who are working, and giving to the poor, the people who aren't.
Yeah,
that should make a liberal happy.
Yeah, but
that's what's all about. Take from the rich, give to the poor. I mean, we're being Robin Hood here. We should make liberals happy with this plan.
What I'm saying,
take from the rich, give to the poor.
What I'm saying, though, is that how it's supposed to work is that you work like the people before.
Sure.
Before 1984, mm-hmm. Before 1984, mm-hmm. working, and that puts into their own personal little thing, isn't it?
No.
Okay, maybe
it's put into the.
It's just a big pool.
Yeah.
Oh, snaps. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's not like it's a personal savings account or a personal retirement plan, which is something that the government has.
Okay, that's what they've been thinking.
Advocated about. Doing that, and the idea of privatizing Social Security.
Okay.
There's
okay,
been a lot of people who are very against that because take Social Security away from Grandpa and Grandma, and the AARP and all the. Democrats in Congress are, scaring all grandpas and grandmas out there trying to tell them that if the Republicans get their way, you're not going to eat next week. Your bread's going to be taken off your table and you're going to be out on the street corner with no way to live and you're going to die in the cold and the freezing. And think about all you've done for America. They can't do that to you. And that's the problem, is that my plan will not box out anybody. My plan will allow everybody who has been getting Social Security to continue to get Social Security, and those who were promised it will continue getting it, and those who are getting out of college will be screwed. Yes, they will be screwed. I will admit that. But like I said, over time, the pool of people getting it will be so small that those who are paying into it, with so many people paying into it, will be paying such a small share of the pie, it won't even be funny. And pretty soon, I mean, it won't be much of a pinch. But think about all the money you pay in taxes now that you don't see.
I understand that, yeah.
So the thing is that to say that it's not fair that somebody pays taxes and gets no benefit out of it, sure, they're getting a benefit. They can feel good about themselves and pat themselves on the back that they're helping Grandpa and Grandma live another week. They can pat themselves on the back and say, you know what, I'm a good person because I'm helping to solve the Social Security problem in America. And guess what? It will be solved. Because we don't need Social Security. We don't need socialist programs. We need to get the government away from the idea of being mom and dad, of protecting and raising each and every single American. Protecting us from ourselves, protecting us for our futures. No, that's not the way it is. That's not the way it should be. People need to be able to live on their own and live in a free society. And that's my spiel on my idea of Social Security and how to fix the problem. And there's not going to be a single politician that will ever give that idea, because they would be massacred. Because, well, first off, you're going to take away some power of the government. I've been working in the full-time world for a while. I actually get reports from Social Security that, they send out these reports, which, is money.
I just actually got my first report.
And it tells you how many hours you've worked, how many hours are eligible for Social Security, how much you're going to have if you keep as you are now, what you're going to get when you retire, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, because I didn't make enough money for my other jobs, but since I went to Iraq, I got enough cash to finally sent me one. I was like, what the heck is this?
Good point. So, and that's another thing is that we're complaining about all these problems in the Social Security that we're running out of money and stuff, but then all of a sudden we turn around and pay for all these envelopes and papers and printers and computers and people and postage in order to send these to millions upon millions of people every year. Once again, something that doesn't need to be done. Now, if you want me to get into how to solve the income tax problem, I could go there too, but that's even easier. See, Forbes had that one right. Go to a sales tax, go to a flat tax. Should be simple. He should see. Forbes says you could do it on a postcard. What did you make? 10% or X percent? Send it in. That's all there is to it. Income taxes should not be taken pre getting your paycheck. Should not be. It should be taken once a year at the end of the year, and people should write a check for it. Or if they want to write it monthly, fine. People should be writing a check for their income taxes, which they should not be paying to begin with, but people should be writing a check. That way they write and feel the pain every single time they write it, rather than having it taken out pre-taxes where it's like, oh, geez, you don't even see it. It's, you know, it's no pain because, you know, they raise tax a little bit. You don't really notice. I mean, do you honestly know what percentage of taxes you pay right now?
I don't know.
You have no clue.
Isn't it a big weird formula?
Exactly. Most people don't know what they're paying in taxes, and that's the beauty about it for the government. Hey, they could do all sorts of magical things and raise taxes and do this and do that and change this and change that. And, you know, if you're lucky, you might find all your deductions or you might do it right. Or, hey, you know what? You might have the IRS breathing down your neck because you did something wrong with your tax report. And if you have it C. Forbes way, how much did you make? 10%? Send it in. You're done. And the other reason, so I don't want, you need to pay your taxes yourself with a check or whatever else. You don't need to be taking it out of the paycheck up front because that way you know what you're paying and you might be a little bit more responsive when the government talks about raising taxes all the time, which they seem to like to do.
Yeah, but how many people just bounce their checks all over
the You'd still have the government.
Come on, we're not that responsible to be able to do that.
Okay, so let's have the government watch out for us.
I understand. I'm just saying, you're one of those. Realistically, then the government would be getting a lot of bounce checks.
You know, I always thought that the ponytail and the tie-dye shirt was just a ruse, but little did I know, you actually are a hippie liberal.
That's true. No.
Just joking. So anyway, I understand that there would be people who would be irresponsible and they would not be paying their taxes properly. And there's already measures in place for people who don't pay taxes. There's tax evasion, all that kind of stuff. The point is that people need to see what they're paying. They need to understand truly how much of their paycheck is going out in taxes. Not just see a line item, but actually write it out on a check. That would hit home quickly. My idea of the national sales tax, that makes it, I mean, right there at the purchase. Taxes paid. And that's the thing I love about Washington. We have a sales tax. We don't have income taxes. You don't have the extra burden of doing income taxes at the end of the year. The taxes are done as soon as you make the purchase. At the end of the year, hey, no big thing. Your taxes are paid. But I love the sales tax for that. And the federal government, if they go to a sales tax too, I don't think the accountants and the HR blocks and all those kinds of places in the world would like that too much because that would take a lot of business out of their pocket. Think about all the tax returns they do every year and the major ones for huge corporations and stuff. Yeah. I mean, there would still be the need for that kind of stuff, but just the average Joe Blow, if you never had to worry about taxes ever again, never had to worry about getting a refund because the government's not taking more than they ought to be taking, which is essentially what a refund is. A refund isn't, oh, gee, the government's being nice and giving me back some of my money.
I paid too much.
So, in other words, I hear all these people, oh, yay, I get $1,000 back, or I got $3,000 back. This is so cool. And it's like, so what you're saying is that it's really cool that you had $3,000 that could have been making interest for the last year sitting in the government's banks. Oh, that's really cool. Really cool. Anyway, let's see what the Reverend has to say about this. We're at the bottom of the hour, or I guess we're getting to the top of the hour. Once again, this is the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM and the Reverend. You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM. If you want to reach us in the studio, give us a call, 335-2207. On the web, www.kzuu.org, and you can reach our website at www.thepes.com. On the telephone with me, I have Jerry Lima of the Palouse Thunder. And before that, let me just tell you a couple more PSAs. The International Trade Craft Fair sale will bring the world to Pullman on Friday, November 4th from 6 to 9 p.m., Saturday, November 5th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Sunday, November 6th from noon to 4 p.m. at the Community Congregational United Church of Christ at 525 Northeast Campus Street. Come and shop for the beautiful fair, Trade Handmade Goods. Oh, man, I'm not going to read this one. It says something about vagina monologues, and I already said it, now I read the whole thing. Calling all vaginas, the Vagina Monologues is holding auditions for the WSU benefit production. November 7th and 8th at 6 p.m. in the Cub, room 220. No experience or preparation necessary. To find out more, contact Diane, 509-335-7472. Alrighty, on the phone, Jerry Lima. How are you? You with me, Jerry? No. We'll give this one a try in one more second here. In the meantime, real quick about the Cougs.
Cougs.
Jerome Harrison, another 100-yard rushing game, 162 yards, no touchdowns. Jason Hill, 6 receptions, 240 yards, with a long of 80 yards, 3 touchdowns. Don't have a lot to say. Once again, they lost. It was a heartbreaker. They keep tearing the heart out from my chest, and it's killing me deep, deep, deep inside. And let's see here. Intramural sports, billiards tournament. Sign-ups end today, so get in there. Play is on October 29th, 2 p.m. for singles, $4 for doubles. Dodgeball, last week we lasted 10 minutes. This week we lasted 20 minutes. We're getting better, but we still lost all the games. So I guess we're not getting that much better. Oh, but anyway, getting back to the Cougs, I want to say it right now, and I want it to be, I want everybody to hear it. The Cougars are going to beat USC. They've learned to play the whole game. And the reason why I say that is this. They've been playing the first half pretty much fine. Then they had problems with the second half. But each entire, in every game, they've been getting better and better and better. The second last game, they only lost the last 5 minutes.
They came back from a deficit.
They stayed with it. They came back. They had 5 minutes to go in the game. They lost it then. So the thing is that as you see that they've gotten further and further and further along, I think that now they will be able to go the full game. They're going to beat USC. Unfortunately, they're the number two ranked BCS USC, because it would have been more fun to beat the number one ranked BCS USC. However, they're still one in the polls. So the Cougs are going to beat USC down at the Coliseum. They're going to send USC's trumpeting band away with their tail between their legs. And you had something to say about Shadle Park, didn't you?
Oh, no, this would be Ferris.
Oh, Ferris, what's the difference?
Yeah, last week you asked if we, what the Ferris was doing, what was going on at the Greater Spokane League, and I deliver. Last Friday, the Saxons beat up on the visiting Clarkston Bantams 41-6 in a game that the Saxons had 422 rushing yards. Anthony Zachary had a career night against Clarkston, rushing for 251 yards on 10 carries. He also made a case for himself as to why he might be the fastest guy in the GSL. He showed some amazing speed and outrun the Bantam secondary on touchdown runs of 32, 82, 59, and 28 yards. Ferris is 5-2 in the league, 6-2 overall, and is tied for third with Central Valley among 4A schools up in Spokane. You know, this is our radio show. We can do what we want. And Meade High School leads the GSL with 7-0 league record, and Gonzaga Prep trailing with 6-1 record. Ferris News, Ferris next plays West Valley High at Joe Albee Stadium tomorrow, if you guys care. Because I do. And, Yeah, and Meade is pretty much crushing everybody. I think they're number 8 overall in the state. I'm kind of excited about that. I like Meade. They usually do pretty well every year.
All right, and for high school football real quick, Pullman Greyhounds, they beat Medical Lake last Friday 62-7. They're now 8-0 in the state 2A poll. They are in first place with Archbishop with 75 points. Pullman had 3 first-place votes, where Archbishop Murphy had 5 first-place votes. Also, my alma mater, Liberty High School, beat Mount Si 28-14. And if everything's working correctly on the telephone with me, we have the owner and the starting center of the Palouse Thunder, Jerry Lima. How you doing, Jerry?
Doing good. How you doing?
All right.
Doing good, too. Good to hear your voice. Now, I was perusing the EFL website last night, and I noticed that the Palouse Thunder had a new name. Is that true?
I can barely hear you.
You can barely hear me? Let's see.
I can hear another guy a little bit better, but I
really?
Can, I can barely hear you.
Life stealing all my thunder. Let's see. Does that make does that help at all, Jerry?
No.
No?
This guy keeps saying thunder in my ear.
let me, okay. How's that going to do for you? Any better? Not at all? Can you hear me at all, Jerry? Jerry can't seem to hear me at all.
I can hear you a little bit better there.
Okay, so I guess if I leave mic 2 on, we can hear him a little bit better. Well, I'm not sure if I could speak too loud, because otherwise I'll blow out everybody else who's listening out there in the world. So, the Thunder has a new name?
Yeah, we're kind of changing the name. We're calling it Quad City Thunder this year, simply for the fact that we are going to be expanding down to the Lewiston-Clarkston area, trying to attach that market, not just the Moscow-Pullman area. So we're trying to incorporate all four cities, Moscow, Lewiston, Clarkston, and Pullman. And so we're trying to incorporate all four teams. That's why we're calling it the Quad City Thunder this year.
Oh, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
So, Palouse Thunder, I've been saying that for so long, to say Quad City Thunder, it's going to be a little bit of a shell shock, a change, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, how long have you been playing football, Jerry?
I played all 4 years of high school, and then I was out of it for quite some time. I started playing again in 2001 when I played for a semi-pro team down in the Burley area. That's what got me interested and involved in amateur football. And when I came up here to attend the University of Idaho, I had plans of walking on for the U of I, but then realized, that I'd probably have a pretty big up-road battle competing with, 18 to 19-year-old kids, being 31 years old at that time, or actually 32 at that time. And so I just started up the Thunder.
Very cool. And, wow. I had a couple questions written down here, and I must have been tired when I wrote them, because I wrote, how long have you been playing football? And how long have you been playing football? I think what I wanted to say there is, how long do you plan on playing football? How much longer do you plan on being out there?
I plan on playing as long as I can. And, my wife keeps telling me that I'm going to play football until, I'm in a wheelchair. And she's probably pretty close. I mean, I just really enjoy the sport. It's just a great release, and just the camaraderie of the team and the competitiveness of the league and all that. I mean, it's just something that I'm really drawn to. And I'm planning on playing, as long as my body can take it and hold up. Then once, I'm done playing, I plan on, just running the team and coaching, get involved more in the coaching side of it and stuff like that.
So, at your point of view right now, after the season's over with, and your body's aching and pains everywhere, what do you think your outlook is as far as the number of more years that you're going to be able to put into it as a starting center?
Well, if you ask me right now, I'd tell you probably at least another 10 years or so, but. That's the thing with football. At any time you could take a career-ending injury. It's amateur football, but it's still football. You get hit in the knee or fall the wrong way. Break a leg. Tear ligaments, and I mean, it's football. So at any time you can just get that career-ending injury, and I mean, I hope that never happens, but if as long as my body holds up and barring any serious injuries, I plan on playing at least for the next 10 years or so.
That's a pretty good goal. That would put you around, 43, 44?
Yeah, it put me up 45, actually.
45, oh, wow.
Yeah. Last year we had a guy that played at 42, or our first year.
Yeah.
Our first year we had a guy that played at 42, and that's my record, is to beat him, be the oldest player on the team.
Well, that's a good record to go for. Now, you talked about this a little bit, but what was the major impetus of starting the team?
The major what?
What was the major reasoning behind you starting your team?
Oh, I just love football. I love to play. Anytime I can get a touch game going, I always got jumped in touch games. Tackle, whatever. I just really love the sport. It's been in my blood ever since I was a teenager. It's just something I've always wanted to play my whole life, and I just can't get enough of it. So. To sit back and watch is fun, and I got into coaching here at Moscow High School. I coached 1 year with Moscow High School. I'm currently coaching youth football for the fifth Moscow Red Thrashers, the fifth and sixth grade team we got here in Moscow. And I mean, I love it. It's a blast coaching, but there's nothing like, you know, being on the field and, you know, actually out there playing and the contact of the sport. And it's just, I mean, it's something, unless you played it and understand it, it's really hard, you know, to explain the draw you have to the sport.
I understand that. When I was doing EMS support at high school football games, I remember, you know, watching the you know, the pep band play, the, you know, the crowds cheer, and the, you know, the players run out on the field and running around and smashing in each other, you know, and it was like, gosh, you know, I want to get back out there and I want to play some more football.
Yeah.
So I totally understand that kind of feeling.
Well, and you know, that there's a lot of that going around. You know, when people hear about us, a lot of our first year players last year, you know, they heard about us, they came out, they tried out, and they saw that this is, you know, smash mouth football. You know, it's not, you know, just, you know, some beer league football. It's a league that takes its football very seriously, all the players and everything. And, you know, a lot of guys come up to me after the season, you know, and say, man, you know, I never thought I'd be able to play football again. You know, I thought my football days were behind me. And a lot of them don't even realize how much they actually miss playing and the competitiveness and the camaraderie of the team and just the whole aspect of football. So, you know, it's a great opportunity for guys that you know, still have that desire to play, you know, and just love, you know, because, you know, you do get exercise out of it, and, you know, so those guys that enjoy all that, those aspects that football has to offer, you know, can come out and still, you know, play and enjoy it.
Yeah, that's the one thing. As you know, I was with the team 2004. Unfortunately, being injured most of the season, I didn't really get the chance to do too much, but that's the one thing that I found was, you know, I mean, other than getting out there and just running around and, you know, even in some practices, being able to hit up against people and just, you know, be on the team, the, you know, pregame locker room stuff, the, you know, loud music, everybody's getting pumped up for the game, everybody's there, you know, it's just like we're family, you know, and that was something that, you know, I didn't remember how much I missed that up until then.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. Now, We understand sort of why you started the team. Now, how did you go about starting the team? How did you figure out that you could even do this?
Well, just, you know, started making some phone calls. You know, the internet's a great thing nowadays. I jumped online and, you know, saw if there was even a league in the area, you know, that I could either, you know, possibly go play on a team somewhere else. And found the INWFL that we played in our first year. And, you know, contacted that league and talked to the commissioner of that league and, you know, asked him what it took to start, you know, asked him where all the football teams were. And, you know, the closest one was in Spokane. And then I, you know, asked him what it would take to start a team down here, thinking, you know, that if I could find enough interest, you know, it'd probably be easier for me to play on a team, you know, more locally than having to drive to Spokane all the time, you know, because practices and stuff like that, driving to Spokane all the time could get it, you know, expensive with driving and, you know, being a student at the time and trying to work two other jobs, you know, the time constraints, you know, and making it to practices and stuff, you know, I thought would be pretty difficult. So, you know, just talking to him, you know, he says, you know, you have to find a field, you have to find your players, you have to find funding, and, I mean, you know, just went through the whole gromlet of things, and you know, I just took it upon myself to, you know, start contacting people and trying to get sponsors to help us out and contact the University of Idaho to see if we could use their field, and you know, slowly but surely everything started falling into place that first year, and you know, we actually started getting guys coming out and practicing and guys getting interested and you know, various businesses in the area started coming on board and helping us out financially to help us, you know, to get our first year underneath us. And you know, slowly but surely, it was a rough season that first season, but, you know, we got her done.
Sure. Now, what kind of age range is on the team currently?
What type of age range is there on the team?
Yeah, like, what do we have for the oldest player right now in the Thunder?
The oldest player right now, his name is Larry Cooley, and he's 39 years old.
Oh, wow. Didn't realize he was that old.
Yeah.
And then you have to be at least 18 to play. Is that correct?
Yeah, you have to be at least 18 to sign the waiver and all that. You know, and it, you know, we don't want to. You know, we're not trying to pull, you know, kids out of high school football or nothing like that by any means. You know, we want them to finish their high school football programs because that's a huge building block, you know. And we, you know, we are a higher level than high school play. You know, if, you know, a senior coming out of high school, he would have the skills to come play on the Thunder, but, you know, you definitely, it's definitely a higher level of play.
Very, very true, because you got a lot of people who are in their 20s that are a lot more developed.
Exactly. Yeah, we have a lot of ex-college players on our team. Actually, exactly. We have, you know, Scott Auer. He played 4 years at the University of Montana. Daryl Murphy. He played here at the University of Idaho. We've had a couple different guys come out from WSU. Joe Williams. He's our fullback. He played for WSU.
The short bus.
Brandon Irving. We're hoping to get him out this year. He almost came out last year. We're really hoping he comes back this year. He's played for WSU. You know, so we have, you know, some guys. There's some other guys that are thinking about coming out this year that are from WSU and the U of I. You know, old, you know, they're done playing with those teams and still want to play some ball, so they're thinking about coming out and playing with us. So, I mean, you have anywhere from, you know, we've had guys that have never played football before, have always wanted to play, but for whatever reason never had the opportunity to play. Come out and, you know, they, granted, you know, we have to go through everything with them, you know, from the basic fundamentals of tackling, you know, but that's something everybody needs to work on continually anyway, you know, but go through the, all the basics, you know, how to get in a stance, you know, just the bare basics of football, you know, and usually by the end of the season, you know, they're getting some playing time and, you know, look, granted, a lot of times it's on special teams and stuff like that, but they're still out there on the field flying around, you know, taking hits and giving hits and, just good football.
Sure. Now, can you explain what is semi-pro football?
What's that?
What is semi-pro football?
What is semi-pro football? Well, I mean, it's amateur football. It's considered amateur football. There's leagues all over the U.S. It's mainly more predominant in your southern states. But basically what it is, it's you know, locally funded football teams. They don't, it's not like a farm league, like amateur, you know, like baseball has, like minor league baseball,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you have a major league team that, you know, you send players, you know, to and from. It's nothing like that. But we do get scouted, you know, NFL teams know that there is young talent out there and not everybody has the opportunity to go to college. And some kids, you know, that play at smaller schools, are good players and may not get the, you know, national exposure that they deserve. So, you know, a lot of times they do, you know, send scouts out to semi-pro teams. And I think mainly right now the arena teams that are really coming up, just like the Spokane Shock is going to be starting up, they send a lot of scouts out to our type of games, looking for those players that can make a big difference in the arena league and the indoor football league. Teams. We had our first year in 2004, we had the San Jose Sabercats, which is an arena team, contact me and inviting three of our players to go try out there.
Wow.
None of them ended up going, but, you know, that was a pretty neat thing to have, you know, the Sabercats, you know, calling up for three of our players, you know, so we thought that was pretty cool.
That is really cool. So the football team has been around for now 2 years, going on its third. Are there any plans for broadcast radio for the next season?
No, we don't have any, like, we don't broadcast our games. We've thought about it. We've kicked the idea around. We've had some stations, you know, willing to broadcast our games. But just the logistics of it, you know, it's just something that we, you know, an avenue we haven't taken yet. You know, we've like I said, we've thought about it, but we just really haven't done it yet.
Okay. And you'd mentioned the Inland Northwest Football League, and you're now in the Evergreen Football League.
Yes.
And several of the teams from the Inland League moved over.
The Inland Northwest Football League was... The commissioner of that league, he ended up making a lot of promises and not keeping. He ended up, and it wasn't just to the people in the league. It was to, you know, sponsors of the league and ended up getting the league in a lot of financial trouble. So a lot of the teams left in Inland Northwest Football League because we didn't want our team names associated with that kind of stuff. You know, I try to run a reputable program. You know, we are on the up and up. You know, we don't try to scam anybody. And this guy was really trying to scam a lot of businesses out in town and getting money and not following through on stuff and not paying bills. And, I mean, he had a lot of money owed out. And, you know, a lot of the teams were sending him money to pay for bills that he wasn't paying and just stuff like that. So, you know, basically I was sending money into a guy, you know, and to, you know, for my ambulances, and my ambulances never got paid, for my police force never got paid. So I ended up having to come back and pay all those bills because those are local Moscow. Mm-hmm. You know, Moscow PD does our games and stuff, you know, so, you know, I had to come back and pay for that stuff out of my pocket, you know, on top of already supposedly paying for it.
Okay.
So, you know, it ended up being a pretty big financial hardship for me also.
That's not good. So, Jared Edgington, one of the coaches from the 2004 Thunder squad, co-founded the new Evergreen Football League. What kind of strengths do you see in the Evergreen Football League?
Probably the biggest strength is the organization of the league. Jared Edgington and Greg Piper, the two guys that established the league, they both played for the Spokane Nightmare, which was a amateur football team up in the Spokane area. And they saw a lot of shortcomings with that team. They saw a lot of shortcomings with some of the other leagues that they played in. So they had a knowledge of what didn't work, you know, and what needed to be corrected in putting a league together. So when they went into putting the league together, you know, they just really wanted to cross all their I's and dot all their T's and make it, you know, something that would stick around and that people could be proud of. And so, you know, they've done it the right way. You know, they hired lawyers and they've hired accountants and they've hired, you know, people to help them organize, you know, and, you know, they oversee it all and they, you know, schedule the games and, you know, they're like the liaison people between, you know, referees and owners and all that, you know, so just the organization of the league and the way they've set it up and, you know, the mission statement that they've had, you know, is to really, you know, to help athletes become to that next level and support communities and stuff like that. And, you know, one great thing I think they've done that I've never seen any other league do was last year we, a dollar from every ticket sold went to a local charity for one of the teams every week. We rotated it through the league and all the home teams would send in a dollar from every ticket sold and whatever week, that team had, you know, they got to give it to a charity of their choice, you know. So, it, you know, money was going back into the communities and stuff like that. And I think that was a huge thing for the EFL last year.
That's very cool. So the Evergreen Football League, it's a semi-pro football league, and semi-pro football typically has three levels of play. There's A, AA, and AAA. AAA being the highest the league can achieve. And from the Evergreen Football League website, I learned that they have moved from AA to AAA for this coming season. So that should raise the level of play a little bit.
And, exactly, yeah.
This coming season will start on April 1st, and it goes through May 20th. There's going to be 8 games this year with one bye during Memorial Week. June 3rd will be playoffs with the Evergreen Bowl 2 played on June 10th, and then the 17th will feature the EFL All-Star Game, which will be played in the Apple Bowl in Wenatchee. One other thing I found on the EFL website, which was really cool, was exciting news for a former Thunder lineman, Wally Bigelow. The EFL is naming the Offensive Lineman Award the Bigelow Award. Jared Edgington commenting on the reason why giving Wally this honor. Wally is everything you can ask for, not only in an offensive lineman, but also in a man. Wally was 42 years old, going out week in and week out, living out his dream, being able to play football just one more time. Wally was the kind of guy who would go and knock someone down, but after the play, help them back up. He never complained. He always came to practice and gave 110%, even bought gifts at season's end for his coaches and thanked them for helping the team out. He is everything anyone would ever want to be, and that's why we're naming the award after him. And I actually spoke to Wally shortly after the 2004 football season concluded, and he was telling me about the touchdown that he scored against, I believe it was Moses Lake. Towards the end of the game, there was a long, I think it was a pass play or a run play, and Thunder got it down to the one-yard line, and Wally was put in, and he ran it in for the touchdown, making it his first football touchdown ever, and, you know, I mean, in his last game ever as a football player, you know, so that was a huge excitement and a great feeling for him. And I just that award being named after him, I can't think of anybody better than Wally to have that kind of honor bestowed upon him. Do you get a chance to speak with Wally much?
I've talked to Wally a couple times throughout last year, and we correspond through emails every now and then. So yeah, I still keep in contact with Wally.
Yeah, he's a really great person, and hopefully we could see him roaming the sidelines, helping out the team in some way in the future. Now, last season, the Thunder played against teams such as the Post-Fall Miners, Spokane SaberCats, the Walla Walla Stars, the Yakima Mavericks, the Wenatchee Rams, Tri-City Knights, and the Columbia Basin Bulls. From what I understand, the Columbia Basin Bulls are taking a year off to reorganize, but most of those opponents will be here again next year for people to see, which when we hear names like Walla Walla, Yakima, Wenatchee, Tri-Cities, that would indicate a fair amount of travel. How does the team deal with traveling from games that are out of town?
Usually what we end up doing is carpooling, you know, we'll like meet at a central location here in Moscow or Pullman, and, you know, all jump in, you know, cars together, you know, try to, you know, utilize as least amount of cars as possible, and drive, you know, just kind of make a big carpool over there. Last year we were lucky enough, the players, you know, kicked in some money, and Rob Dunn, who owns two tobacco stops down in Lewiston, he really pitched in and helped us out, and we were able to get a bus for the Wenatchee game, because that was a pretty big game, pretty big, you know, drive all the way over there and then play in the game and then have to drive back, you know, safety reasons, stuff like that.
Yeah.
We really wanted to get a bus for that game. So we were lucky enough to get a bus for one game last year. But, yeah, you know, that's something that, you know, these guys, you know, they drive, you know, we usually leave here between, depending on what time the game starts, usually like 9, 10 in the morning, you know, we drive for quite a bit of the day, you know, get somewhere, play a football game, and then have to turn around and drive back, you know. And
makes for a very
long day.
There's
lots of times where I'm, you know, worried about players coming back, you know, driving back after a game, being tired, stuff like that, you know. And I would really like to try to get the team a bus, you know, or, you know, be able to find the money to you know, schedule us a bus for you know, the season, so we didn't have to worry about traveling. You know, that could also help with team unity. You know, it's a huge thing, you know, being able to, when we went to the Wenatchee game, you know, to be able to sit there and watch the game film on the bus on the way over there, you know, to talk about our game plan and you know, just build that unity, you know, that togetherness on the way over there. I think it was, you know, a huge benefit for us. Unfortunately, you know, we lost that game, you know, went down, we had the ball fourth down, 10 yards to go, going into the end zone with 1.4 seconds on the clock, you know, and tip ball, touch, you know, and they intercept the ball, you know, kind of deal. So, I mean, you know, it was a close game. It was a good game, you know, so I really think it helped us.
Yeah. The I saw, you know, throughout last year and the year before, you definitely saw learning from a lot of people, you guys who were making the transition from high school to semi-pro. You know, I believe Scotty Sumner, he was fresh out of high school, wasn't he, in 2004? Or had he
played? Actually, Scotty graduated in 2003, I believe.
Okay. So he wasn't quite fresh out, but...
Yeah, I think he had been out of football for 1 year.
Okay. So it was, I mean, it's great to see, you know, that some of the guys who'd played football, local high schools around, getting the chance to play some more ball. Plus, you know, like you said, all the people who never thought they'd get a chance to put on the uniform again and get out there and hit the people, and just, you know, people who want to learn how to play football never had the opportunity when they're younger, and they want to give it a shot now. You know, it's, I guess you could say in some ways it's never too late. You're listening to KZU 90.7 FM. I'm talking with Jerry Lima, the owner of the Quad City Thunder. And We had last season 7 members of the team make it to the All-Star, the EFL All-Star game. Daryl Murphy, you, Jerry Lima, Rob Dunn, Josh Yarno, Dan Wicks, Tom Schell, and Lanny Peterson. That's a pretty good showing from the team.
Yeah, we had quite a few guys voted into the All-Star game, and you know, went down there, went up to Spokane, and it was actually a really good game. You know, there's a little, you know, throughout the season, you know, it's for my first time ever playing in an All-Star game, and you know, you play against a lot of these teams all season long, you know, and we played Walla Walla twice and State Line twice and Spokane twice, you know, and there's some bitter blood there sometimes, you know, taking some tough losses, and you know, you get some stuff talked back and forth, and you know, so, but then you come together for that All-Star game, and just coming together to now fight against the opposing division, and my first experience being involved in something like that, and it was a really neat experience on how, you know, even though we fight all year long against each other, you know, at the end of the year we can come together and unite and, you know, really play a tough game against another team. You know, it was really interesting.
Cool. And thinking, speaking of the 2005 squad, what is it about them that made you the most proud this last season?
About last year's team?
Yeah.
Just the never die attitude we have. You know, we had some pretty tough games this last season. But you know, the guys never quit. You know, the core of the team never really quit. They just kept fighting all season long, even though, you know, our record wasn't showing how good I think our team is. You know, we never quit, and you know, and the pride that we have for the Thunder and the drive that the guys have, that's probably
very good. And what are those positive things are going to get carried forward into the 2006 season?
We're going to continue to make the commitment to the team. You know, that's something that I'm going to, you know, really stress to the team this year's commitment. You know, last year we had a lot of new guys, and I think some of them didn't really understand everything about, you know, how the team ran. And that's probably my fault. I should have done a better job of that, is, you know, getting, you know, we had a lot of guys missing games and stuff like that, and that's something, you know, you just can't have. So that's something I'm going to really stress to this year's team, is, you know, we have to have that commitment level, you know, if we're going to achieve everything, you know, we want to achieve playing football here. You know, we have a new head coach this year. His name's Dennis Manning. Brian Stewart, he did a great job our first 2 years, and he's going to be a huge loss to the team. He's still unsure. He's living up in the Coeur d'Alene area right now. He's still unsure if he's going to be able to come down and help us coach or not. Well, I'm sure hoping that he can, you know, make those trips down from Coeur d'Alene, because he's probably, you know, the heart and soul of the Thunder. I mean, all the players, you know, they get their tenacity and their drive from him. He's just an excellent head coach and did a great job for us, and he's going to be a huge loss to the team. But, you know, we're going to try to carry over that spirit that Brian Stewart brought to the team, you know, that, you know, it doesn't matter how far we're down or how far we're up, you know, we're just going to keep fighting every single play, and we're going to win every single play, and we're just going to, you know, dominate teams, you know, just that whole winning attitude that Brian carried to the team. That's what I'm hoping we can really, you know, continue, even though he may not be with the team, that we can really carry that spirit over.
Okay. 2006, the Quad City Thunders will be playing in what stadium?
Undetermined at this point. I'll be honest. We are looking at playing more of our games down in Lewiston, more than likely all of our games, as long as we can get the field down in Lewiston. And for the simple fact is economics. It costs us approximately, the field for the dome is right around $1,200. Then we have, you know, $300+ for police force and stuff like that. So you're looking at, you know, $1,500 to $1,600 to host a game in the dome. And, last couple of years, you know, we've lost $300 to $500, sometimes even more per game. You know, so simple economics, we're trying to find a cheaper field, hoping to get into, you know, one of the high school fields down there in Lewiston. We're hoping to get Bengal Field. We're hoping to get it a little bit cheaper rate than we can get the dome at. But right now we don't have a home field secured yet.
Okay. And do you have any idea of what the ticket prices are projected to be, and if season tickets are available?
They're going to be the same price: $7 for adults, $5 for students, and 5 and under free. Yes, we're going to offer a season pass again this year. And if you buy the season pass, basically you get into all of our preseason games free. The season pass will be $35. This year will be $28 because we only have 4 home games this year.
Okay.
So it'll be $28, which covers, you know, $7 per game for the home games. But you'll have all the preseason games for free.
Okay. And you already talked about the loss of Stu from the coaching staff. But who will be coaching in 2006? What other coaches will be returning?
Right now we just have replaced Stewart with, like I said, Dennis Manning. We have a couple other coaches that we are in the process of talking to and trying to get. But, you know, I don't want to say anything until we actually, you know, make agreements with them.
Sure.
So right now our coaching situation is kind of up in the air. We are looking for coaches. We need, you know, both years, that's another shortcoming of the team, I think. Both years we've had, you know, basically a head coach and assistant coach, and one of them did offense and one did defense kind of deal. We had no position coaches that could really help us out. We would have, you know, a couple people sometimes come to a game and try to help us out from time to time. You know, and our team's kind of a unique team in a lot of ways, and unfortunately all the ways that we're unique is kind of to a negative on the team. We're the only team out there that only has, you know, two coaches. Most other teams we face have 5-plus coaches. They all have, you know, their head coach, offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, you know, line coaches, backs coach, DB coach. You know, they have just a bunch of different coaches that can really help the players, you know, on the field see more, you know, get a better understanding of what other teams are trying to do against them, to make plans, you know, to make adjustments as the game proceeds. And that's just something we don't have. So, you know, that's something that hurts the team.
Sure.
And another thing is, you know, all the other teams have, you know, a financial backer of some type. Most teams have a regular operating budget of $30,000+, and the Thunder basically, whatever money we can raise is our operating budget, you know, and we've been operating on between $15,000 and $20,000 that we've been getting sponsors throughout the community. But, you know, we just don't have, you know, it's just really hard to compete with some of these other teams that have the bigger budgets and can, you know, can hire the coaches and get the coaches to come out and do a lot more.
Sure. So, what is the history of the head coach that you now have? What has he done before this?
Dennis Manning, he has, I guess he was a high school All-American. He played in some JC ball, and got called away to Vietnam. Spent some time over in Vietnam, and when he came back, went down and tried out for the Dallas Cowboys. Got put on the Dallas Cowboys practice squad. Did a couple years with the Dallas Cowboys practice squad, and then went and was a player coach for the LA Express, which was part of the USFL, for those old people that remember the USFL. was a player coach for the USFL. Got done there, did some coaching in some different JCs in California, and finally moved up here to Idaho. He's currently living in St. Mary's and helping out in St. Mary's.
Oh, very cool. So it sounds like he has a pretty decent background in football, and hopefully that can equate into a couple extra W's this coming season.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping, to bring somebody in with some more experience. You know, like I said, you know, Brian had experience through the Marine Corps and through playing for the University of Idaho, but, you know, he never, you know, this is his first coaching job, other than he did coach at the, Moscow High School for a short time. Mm-hmm. This is his first coaching job, you know, so, you know, he it was a learning process for him, and I think he learned a lot from coaching us, and I think he's, you know, I think he's a great coach, and he's going to take those skills on to the next team that he's working with. And I know Brian, and he's going to be staying in coaching somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we would love to have him back. You know, but yeah, I think, you know, bring somebody else in with a little bit more experience in coaching, and you know, year wise, you know, I think you know, that's going to help us out also.
Sure. Now, how many returning starters do you have this year coming back?
Well, I'll be honest, we don't have everybody signed yet, so it's, you know, right now the numbers are really hard to tell. I know some players have made commitments to go to other teams. They're moving, you know, they're not attending the University of Idaho anymore, so, you know, they're not going to play. We've had Ivan Suke, he got hurt last year, mm-hmm. So he's not going to be playing with us this year. You know, so I'm real kind of lenient on giving out numbers. I hope all our player, you know, returning players come back. You know, we definitely can use them. There wasn't a guy on the team that I wanted to lose last year. But right now, you know, we haven't signed everybody yet. And I've heard rumors of some people aren't going to play, but, you know, I really don't want to, you know, say anything until I've actually talked to those players.
Sure. Now, you got tryouts coming up this week and next week, October 29th, 12 noon to 3 p.m. at Lewiston, Jennifer Junior High School practice field, and November 5th from 12 noon to 3 p.m. at the Moscow's Joseph Field. Now, how does this work? Does people show up? Do they need to call ahead of time?
Nope, they just show up there. There is a $25 tryout fee. You get a T-shirt with that, and that, you know, the $25 basically covers, you know, all the costs associated with, you know, putting a tryout on. You know, we provide all the equipment that they're going to need. All they basically have to do is show up in some shorts and some, you know, cleats, because it is going to be on grass this year. Last year we did it in the dome, and you know, so just tennis shoes were fine. But, you know, there's a cost associated, you know, with running the tryout. So, you know, that's what the $25 covers. And, you know, we got a good deal on getting some T-shirts. So we're giving out T-shirts for it this year.
Great. And, you know, just real quickly, you're the owner of the Quad City Thunder, but that doesn't mean you're making money off the team. So it's not like you're making money off these tryouts. This, I mean, you, what I understand is, pretty much everything that you bring in is put right back out in expenses for the team. So this is not a money-making proposition for you at all.
Exactly, no.
This is just a labor of love.
It makes me no money whatsoever.
Sure. So you already mentioned bring shorts and a pair of cleats. Any other equipment that they need to bring at all, pads of any sort?
Nope, that's it.
Okay. Now, what is going to be expected of the players at the tryouts?
We're going to be running 40s, doing some different agility drills, vertical jumps, stuff like that. So, you know, it's just basically an idea for the coach to get an idea of where the players are skill-wise, conditioning-wise, stuff like that. Because basically, you know, the actual try, you know, just like any team, you know, you come, you work out, you know, with the team, and they hold, you know, keep as many people as they can on the roster, and then you start learning your plays, and then you get, you know, you get in your pads, and people actually start hitting, and a guy can look, you know, can come to your tryouts and be the fastest guy there, and look, you know, nimble as all, you know, as you would want him to be, and then you put him in all of his gear, and he loses half of it, and he's nowhere near the player that he was, you know, with all that stuff off. Where, you know, there's another guy that's kind of average, and once you put all those pads on him, he kind of stands out now, because, you know, now you're really seeing him, you know, deliver a blow, or, you know, he can really, you know, hit somebody hard, and, you know, so the tryout is, you know, making the team is a continual thing, you know, that really starts in January when we start padding up. We have our first padded practice in the first Saturday of January, and, you know, that's really when the tryouts start. This is more of a thing where the coach comes and gets an idea of where the players are at. So the November, December practices that we have are geared towards, you know, because a lot of us especially, you know, new players that are, they're not in football shape. You know, they've been out of football for a while, so it's an opportunity for them to come out, and even us returners who, you know, don't have the opportunity to work out every day and stay in shape in the off season, you know, to get back in shape, you know, to get our legs back underneath us and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. Now, you've already said the practices are going to start November, December, and then the pads get put on in January, so that's just right around the corner. Now, what is the eligibility for somebody to play on the team? In other words, is there any limitations on other than age as far as if they played pro or if they've, you know, done X, Y, or Z?
Nope.
Anybody and everybody can play.
No limitations. You know, in our league, we don't have any ex-NFL players, but when I played in the RMFL, which was a team down in Burley, the Helena team out of Montana, they had their running back was an ex-NFL player.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was pretty sharp stuff.
I can imagine. So what are going to be the out-of-pocket costs for players come season time?
This year we're going to have a $150 player fee, which $75 of that goes to the league to cover league expenses. The league pays for the ambulances and stuff like that. And then the rest goes to the team to cover team expenses, you know, helping us start getting fields for practicing, helping us, you know, start getting money put back for games and getting programs set up and all the paperwork involved and, you know, the waivers that players have to sign and all that kind of stuff, all the administrative costs that covers. And then this year I'm requiring all the players to provide all their own equipment, because in the last two years I've tried to provide the equipment for the players, but in this setting, you know, there's lots of guys that halfway through the season, you know, they'll quit, drop out of school or something to that effect, and they leave town, and they leave town with you know, the Thunder's equipment, and it's just a huge expense that we've had to incur that's really making it harder for the team to keep existing, you know, if we keep losing equipment and have to rebuy it every year. So, you know, I understand players have a hard time, you know, paying a higher player fee, you know, and getting their equipment. So this year, you know, I'm lowering the player fee to, you know, bare minimum and having them provide their own equipment. That way at the end of the season, you know, if they choose not to play, they can turn around and sell it to another player or, you know, sell it, you know, somewhere else.
Sure. Now, as far as the player fees go, are there ways where the players can do fundraising or anything like that to help get some of those fees paid?
Yeah, for the player fees, we offer them. We put together a program that is handed out at every game. So all the businesses in there, it's a way for them to advertise in our program. The fans that come, they don't have to buy the program, so all the fans get them. And we have advertising packages that if a player gets a sponsor, basically a company that will pay his player fees, you know, and buy advertising space in that program, then that money goes towards his player fees.
Okay, so for those poor college students who would love to play football but probably can't afford equipment plus player fees, there are opportunities to find money to help them play.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I have connections on getting equipment at lower cost than most other people can, because I've done this for a couple years now, you know. So and I'm selling, you know, we still do have some equipment and I'm selling that off basically as a first come first serve opportunity for players for basically what I got it for, you know. So any players out there that are looking for equipment, you know, they can contact me, you know, and get their stuff from me. Then I can guarantee they'll get into it very cheaply.
Okay. And real quick, the website is www.palousethunder.com. You can find information about the tryouts, email addresses, and other information about the Thunder if you are interested in getting more information about them. And for those people who might not want to play football but might want to be part of a team atmosphere and do something to help out, What kind of things are there for those kind of people, Jerry?
Oh, there's tons of needs. We have, you know, we need athletic trainers. We need equipment managers. You know, those guys on the sideline, a player, you know, breaks a snap on his helmet that can come off, and, you know, guys standing there ready with the screw gun or something like that that can swap that out for the player, you know, really fast.
So it'd be like the
water boys, you know, just chain crews. There's just a ton of need. You know, we need ticket takers at our games, people to help sell T-shirts, people to help us run concessions. I mean, there's a ton of ways people can help out.
Okay.
Anybody willing, you know, interested in helping out, just contact me, and I can definitely find you a job.
Okay, and then as far as coaching, same kind of thing. They want to get into coaching. They've never done it, or they've been coaching for a while, and they'd love to do some more coaching over the summertime. Same kind of deal?
Exactly, yeah. You know, we are looking for some experienced coaches, but, yeah, somebody who has never coached before but, you know, knows the game and would like to come out and get involved, you know, that, you know, in the coaching aspect, we'd love to have them come out. Yeah.
Okay. Now, just to clear something up, you had talked about signing coaches and signing players. This is not a paid league in any way. Everybody plays just for the love of the game, and they don't get any financial compensation, correct?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Now, what other kind of things about the Quad City Thunder and upcoming charity events or upcoming fundraising events are there that you want to talk about?
Well, to be honest, right now, we don't have any fundraisers planned. We'll probably start planning our fundraisers, you know, after the tryouts, after we make it through tryouts, you know, then we'll start talking to guys about the different things that they are willing to do, what they want to do. I believe our cheerleaders, which they had their first tryout last night, they're having their second tryout tonight, so it's the last chance for any girls out there who would like to come out and try to make the Thunder Girl Squad. I believe they are planning, like, some car washes and stuff like that to help them buy their uniforms and stuff, but the football players haven't established any fundraisers yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, we better mention something about the cheerleaders, otherwise your wife might not be too happy with you, huh? So where are the cheerleader tryouts, you know?
Oh, yeah, cheerleaders tryouts are at 6:30 at the Kibbe Dome.
6:30 at the Kibbe Dome? And can they get more information about that on the PalouseThunder.com website as well?
Yes, yeah, it's on the website under the cheer link, and also they can contact me, and I can get them in contact with the cheer captain.
Great. Well, Jerry, I really appreciate your time talking about the Palouse Thunder, or the Quad City Thunder. It's going to take me a while to get used to that one. But it was fun to get a chance to talk to you. I'm definitely looking forward to 2006, being back out there and doing whatever little bit I can do to help the team. And once again, like I said, I appreciate your time. And we'll have a link to the Palouse Thunder website off of our website, thepes.com. And I'm sure you can remember PalouseThunder.com. But now with the name change, are you going to be getting a new domain and changing that over to Quad City Thunder as well?
We will be changing that. I have somebody working on that right now. But what we're going to do is we're going to, you know, if you typed in Palouse Thunder, it'll have redirect you to Quad City Thunder.
Sure. That's great. Alrighty, once again, Jerry Lima, owner of the Palouse Thunder and the Starting Center. Tryouts October 29th, that's Saturday, noon to 3 p.m., Jennifer Junior High School practice field down in Lewiston. And November 5th, noon to 3 p.m. at the Joseph Field in Moscow. Now, where's Joseph Field at?
Joseph Field is off of Mountain View. It's on the eastern side of Moscow, kind of behind the fairgrounds, the Latah County Fairgrounds.
Okay, so out by where the Safeway and...
Yes, yeah. Mountain View is the main street that runs north and south through Moscow, and Joseph Street is a street just off of Mountain View that basically takes you out to Robinson Park.
All right. Well, once again, Jerry, thank you for all the time you've given us, and hopefully we'll get a couple people out there to try out for the team, and hopefully we'll get a lot of people out there cheering us on for the 2006 season.
Definitely, yeah.
All right.
And I just want to thank you, Scotty, for, for having me on your show today, and thank you for supporting the Thunder.
No problem. Have a good one, Jerry.
You too.
This is the PES, and you are listening to The Reverend.